Committee on Education for Monday, May 14, 2007. Welcome, members. Welcome, folks, here to testify on the various bills we have in front of us. Members, I'm going to move the agenda around a little bit today. We have George Russell from Eugene here, who is wants to give his thoughts on Senate Bill 318. So what I plan to do is open a short work session on 318 to listen to Mr. Russell's comments, close that work session, move through the other three bills we have on our agenda, come back to 318 at the end of the session today. I don't plan on moving the bill today. There's a variety of amendments going through, so I think we'll use our time today to discuss those amendments for 318, but we won't be moving on that bill this afternoon. So with that, I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 318 and ask Mr. Russell if he would like to come forward and share his thoughts with us today. Welcome, Mr. Russell.
Thank you, Chair Buckley and honorable members of the committee. I appreciate you accommodating your schedule for me. I do have to rush right back to Eugene for another meeting, but I want you to know that in addition to being superintendent of the Eugene School District, I'm also the president of the Oregon Association of School Executives, which is the 275-member organization that represents Oregon's school district and educational service district superintendents. Last Friday, the OASE held a meeting that was attended by 89 superintendents from around the state. At that meeting, we devoted a fairly substantial part of our agenda to a full discussion and debate on Senate Bill 318 and the -9A amendments that you will be considering. Superintendents representing both the support and the opposition side to the proposed amendment that includes 4.75% of the school improvement fund to the education districts discussed and debated to some extent their points of view on that particular amendment. At the end of the discussion, we asked the 89 superintendents who were in attendance to vote on the amendment, to take basically a straw poll to whether or not to include the ESDs in that school improvement fund. The vote was 81-8 in favor of including them in the Senate Bill 318. The ESD, I want to report to you that and explain why our organization strongly supports supporting the -9A amendments to include ESDs. As some of you already know, ESDs currently provide classroom education for about 6% of Oregon students, including some of those who are the most challenging to educate. OASE believes that those students as well deserve the same school improvement opportunity as do all other students in Oregon. And this amendment would help accomplish that goal. OASE strongly supports the goal of House Bill 3184 that was passed by the legislature the last session, which includes as one of its four missions now for the ESDs that of school improvement. Most of Oregon school districts are very small, and it is only through the kind of systemic approach promised in the -9A amendments that they would be able to participate in both well-developed school improvement plans and activities, but also would encounter the same kind of accountabilities that school districts are expected to meet under Senate Bill 318. OASE strongly supports the regional approach that results in districts operating in concert with each other to guarantee that we don't create redundant programs, and rather than we would rather that we share the resources and leverage them into collaborative solutions to meet state education goals. The -9A amendments would help accomplish that goal, we strongly believe. I know that I speak for all but a handful of superintendents around the state when I tell you that passage of this measure will result in real school improvement throughout Oregon for all of its students. I appreciate your time, and thank you for, again, accommodating your schedule.
Thank you, Superintendent Russell. For the record, would you please just state your name into the microphone?
Okay. George Russell. I am, as I mentioned earlier, the superintendent with the Eugene School District, but I serve currently as the president of the Oregon Association of School Executives, which is the superintendent's organization.
Great. And can I ask, are there any questions, members? Sure, Mr. Russell.
Yes. Representative Krell. Thank you. So, Dr. Russell, how many superintendents are members of the association?
Well, there's 275 members of OASE. Some of those include non-superintendents, but about 190-some school districts, and then another, let's say, 20 or so ESD superintendents would be the actual number of superintendents, and then we have some representatives from the Department of Education, high-level executives as well.
Okay, and follow-up, Ms. Rivera. Was this a regular meeting of the association, or was this one that was called for the purpose of addressing this particular?
It was a regularly scheduled meeting. We have, I was going to say monthly, but it's not quite monthly, what we call off-the-record meeting of superintendents from across the state, and all of the students are, I mean, all of the superintendents, who are also students, by the way, are invited to attend, and we cover a number of key issues and also have reports from key legislators sometimes, from the State Department of Education as well. So, for example, we had representatives from the governor's office who spoke on some other matters. We looked at the school funding situation. But it's a periodic meeting. Probably happens 4 to 5 times a year.
Okay. Thank you.
Vice Chair Kahn.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up to that question. Are these public meetings with notices and review of the minutes available?
Well, the intent of the off-the-record meeting is to give, generally speaking, superintendents a chance to talk about issues that are affecting their districts without it being a public meeting in the sense of
right.
The open meeting law, and we have invited guests, and so we do keep some notes, but I wouldn't say, and I'd have to probably yield to Kent Hunsaker on how official those notes are and what the dissemination would be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Members, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 318. We'll come back to it later this afternoon, time permitting. And I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 216. And Mr. Olson, when you have a chance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 216 mandates that every child at a youth care center, whether public or private, receive an appropriate education. Declares an emergency is effective July 1st, 2007. And I believe the Department of Education is here to speak on behalf of the bill.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Please. You identify yourself for the record. We'd appreciate it.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Buckley and committee members. My name is Eric Richards. I'm the Director of Operations for the Oregon Department of Education's Office of Student Learning and Partnerships. I'm here today to provide information on Senate Bill 216, which is essentially a bill to get clarification on an existing practice in Oregon. We currently have under the same roof, essentially, youth who are placed by courts in detention facilities for detention purposes, and youth placed by juvenile departments or other agencies in that same facilities for treatment purposes. So if you look at the back of the sheet, you'll see the locations, the contractors, and the number of beds in those locations. Youth who are served in these facilities in a treatment capacity are placed in youth care center beds as opposed to detention beds. There are currently 5 such facilities in Oregon. Both sets of youth receive an education at public expense at their particular location. The responsibility for education of the youth placed in the detention facilities is on the Department of Education. Current statute says that the education of youth placed in privately operated youth care centers is the responsibility of the local school district where the facility is located. No current statute exists to define responsibility for youth who are placed in publicly operated youth care centers. So youth care centers are not covered technically under the definition of a detention facility, and therefore youth placed there cannot be legally defined as detention youth under the authority of ODE to provide educational services or to claim them as students served. We're asking for a clarification through this legislation that no matter if a public agency or a public private agency places a student or operates one of these youth care centers, that it remain the responsibility of the local school district to provide the education, School districts may choose to hire their own teacher to go to the facility, or they may choose a subcontract with the detention facility for the education services. Little or no impact will be realized with the bill, as the practice is already in place. It's a technicality to clarify. School districts are currently claiming students in the youth care centers for funding purposes, and ODE claims those students placed for detention purposes. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Any questions, members? Representative Greenman.
Yeah, I don't understand what you just said. Is the youth care center, the youth care center beds and detention beds, are they just administratively labeled, or are they beds that are over here for one and over here for the other?
They're located in the same facility, but for different population. One there for treatment, the other there for detention purposes.
Well, I don't know what a facility looks like, but let's say there's a 12-bed room there. Does that 12-bed room have eight of one kind and four of the other kind? And the only anybody that knows that they're different are you at the administrative level?
Representative Greenlick, Chairman Buckley, I believe that is true.
So it can be a treatment bed 1 month, and that same bed next month will have a different person in it, and they'll be in a detention bed.
There are a total number of beds, correct? Chairman Buckley and Representative Greenlight, a total number of beds, and a certain number of them are reserved for youth care center people, which is up to four, for example, in the first setting in Coos County, as an example. But it could be 12 beds total if there were no persons in that particular program there.
Well, I can't understand how anybody could be confused by this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Will you explain it to me? Just tell me how to vote. That's
all right. Vote for it.
Any other questions?
Can I have a little more explanation?
Representative Rowland.
Thank you, Chair. I could speak to the Coquille School District handling the Coos County Detention Center, and the beds do change from time to time, depending on how the person is placed there, whether it's by court or whether they're in detention for some other reasons. Coquille and the rest of the school districts came to the conclusion this has really been a difficult thing for these kids who get taken out of school for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, depending on what happens. And they need to have their education so it doesn't get interrupted. So all the counties came together and said, Coquille, it's in your school district. Why don't you do that? We'll send our state support to you when they're there. So you provide the teacher that goes to the place and helps educate these kids so that when they come back, they're back in the school when they get back there. And at least with the stuff in our district, I don't know, that other than the way the money flows, we don't really care. We just want all of the kids that are there to get an education while they're being held so that when they come back, they're in better shape. And some of the differences is at Coquille is that some of those kids come from outside of our school districts because they come from, they're adjudicated differently at times. We don't care about that either. They're there, they need to be educated, and we educate them. And I think that's what's important. And basically what this bill does say is that everybody's going to have to do those kinds of things in the future. It's a good bill.
Do you want to try to explain to Representative
Representative Greenlick already said he'd vote like I told him to.
I always do.
Representative Lim.
But I would like to explain to
him. Hold on. I'm sorry, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to give you some information, some education, when the youth placed at the youth care center, are they incarcerated inside of the building or could they go in and out? What's the situation?
Children who are in the youth care centers are there for treatment purposes. So it's typically a shorter term program, but there is a responsibility to provide them with educational services while they're in that setting.
But they don't have the freedom to move out. They need to stay inside the facilities.
They're there for a period of time until such time as it's determined that they no longer need to be there.
Okay, so the follow-up. So in other words, they need to stay inside to be educated. They have no freedom to go home or go some other place other than they need to stay in the facilities, whatever, 1 week or 2 weeks.
Chairman Buckley and Representative Lamb, I believe that is true, but may I get back to you with a definite answer on that?
Sure.
Okay, I do appreciate it.
Okay.
Representative Dolan.
No, I'm taking another shot at this. When I served in one school district, we had a facility in Eugene that was outstanding, privately held facility. We had youth that would get in a predicament. In this particular case that I'm thinking of, with drugs, they were sent to that private facility, so they could not come and go. They either stayed there and took that treatment, or if they left, they were subject to further adjudication by the court. Because they were there for treatment, it was incumbent upon the district to see to it that their education continued. We not only did that happily, we worked with the school district in Eugene, and they provided the teacher, we paid the freight. It worked very well. It is a good bill.
What's the problem, John?
Right now, the law does not provide for paying for a student that's in a private institution, and this will simply clear that up and say, we will pay if they will go.
But they took private out.
There never was a private in there, and the private is being put in. Mm. It simply allows you to continue a student's education when they're under treatment.
Vice Chair Cobb.
Just a clarification, Mr. Richards, about the funding. So I have student A from Coos Bay, and he's going to be in your center. So you get total ADMW, the weighted formula, per day that they're in your center. The district isn't keeping any of the money. It's all going to you.
We have JDEP, Juvenile Detention Education Program contracts with the centers that provide funding for services, as well as long-term care treatment program contracts. We have these kind of programs that are both state and federally funded. But the school district does, the resident school district does claim the student for state school funding purposes.
Okay, because I'm trying to follow the money. And I've been trying to follow the money for about 20 years. So, can I follow up, please?
Follow up, please.
So, in your statement, you have that the school district gets to claim their daily attendance ADMW.
School districts claim students in youth care centers for funding purposes.
Okay.
Chair Buckley and Representative Comp. And ODE claims those students placed for detention purposes.
Well, I'm getting there.
Okay.
Because my question is, if a student, and I don't know where it's represented, Wisnet, when I need him, but if a student is a special ed student that has some, let's say, emotional difficulties, which probably many of your students are, they would get, let's say the amount that the formula gives out now for students is $7,500. So therefore, that student to Coos Bay School District's value is part of the be $15,000 for the whole year. And my question is, do you get, or how do you get your money?
Chairman Buckley and Representative Comp, the Oregon Department of Education in its detention contracts receives some state funding, and also IDEA funding that can be applied for those programs. So we get some from the state and some from the federal government.
And just one last follow-up. They give you the money from the feds and a certain amount of money along with the school districts.
We, Chairman Buckley and Vice Chair Comp, we do what's called a flow-through formula for IDEA funds.
Okay.
Approximately 90% of the block grant that comes to the state of Oregon for students 5 through 21 in the state of Oregon goes through an allocation through a very complex formula. That money flows through to districts and also to programs, and this would be a program that serves students on IEPs ages 5 through 21.
I'm going to
Give us there?
One, yes.
You'll get them.
Do you also, because those flow-through monies frequently come through an ESD, do you know if these come straight from the Oregon Department of Education, or is there funds that also come from education service districts?
These funds would come directly through contract with the Oregon Department of Education, Chair Buckley and Vice Chair Comp, to the contracting agency.
Okay. What I would ask of staff, I'd like to see what this looks like. We had a recent discussion about how the money flows for virtual schools, and I'm just curious as I'll get at how the money flows and from which entities for our youth that need it so desperately, and I support, but I'd like to see how it works.
Very good. Mr. Wilson, you got a clarification?
Yes, 2 points. One is I'll follow up with the Department of Education and see if we can get some more details on that. And just to clarify, because there was some discussion back and forth, this bill merely deletes the part that had the law applying only to kids in private agencies.
Correct.
So now it applies to all. There's some on the public-private discussion. So basically now whether the child is in a private or public, this statute applies to them. That's the gist of the change.
I appreciate your clarification, Staff Olson, because I did get sidetracked with that paragraph.
Testimony. Further questions?
Yeah, it does that by taking out parts of line 6 and 7 and then taking out all of line 17 and 18?
Yes.
Because line 17 and 18, I'm not sure what line 17 and 18 said, but it looked like it said it doesn't apply to...
Right.
Right, and by... Chair Buckley and Representative Green, by deleting that and by making the change in line 6 and 7, it applies to private and public.
So then it says every child is entitled to an education, and the school district in which the youth care center is located must provide it.
Correct. And my understanding is, from talking from the testimony and from looking in this just codifies the situation as it's de facto being done.
It doesn't say the home board has to pay for it.
No.
Right? No. So this will become the financial responsibility of the board where the facility is in.
339137.
Working through ODE.
So why will money flow?
Representative Dom, give it a shot.
There will be, in my mind, absolutely no financial impact. Let me start here. Johnny enrolls as a freshman. He gets into some sort of problem where he needs a youth care center. I used drugs at one time. It could be a host of other things. Off he goes to the center. It could be Serenity Lane in Eugene,
right,
which does an outstanding job.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be, in my community, Norcor. Now, all that has happened is rather, if he goes to Norcor, the whole situation changes because that student's incarcerated. Now the money, instead of flowing to my school district, will flow through ODE to Norcor. If the student is in Serenity Lane, it may go either way. I would assume if it were a long-term placement, perhaps ODE would take over. If it were short-term, they may simply contract with the school district.
But why would they contract? This simply says if they go to Serenity Lane, Eugene is not responsible for them.
No, it says this bill says that student has a right to an education.
Yeah, and it says it has to be provided by the district the facilities in.
Right, which is where Eugene is. Serenity Lane is in.
So Eugene needs to do it.
No, the facility needs to. Serenity Lane needs to do it, or Norcor needs to do it, or the facility at Coos Bay needs to do it, not the school.
Yeah, but there isn't anything that says your district has to pay for that kid.
My district, if the money is allocated through ODE, my district is out of the equation. The full funding for that student will flow through ODE. ODE will see to it that the education is full and complete with the agency involved.
It doesn't say that in the bill either.
It doesn't have to.
Representative Rose.
Take a shot at it.
I'm going to take a shot, too. What basically
I'm sorry, Peter.
That's all right.
No, but from my perspective, as I read this bill, what it does is it codifies what's already happening, but it also does this. It says the money
follows the kid.
Where does it show me that? That's what I'm looking for.
Because when it says it goes, the district is responsible for whatever the facility is in. That's where the kid is residing. That's why that's the district's responsibility. Once the kid moves, the money moves with him. And if it's being provided by an agency in which ODE has to give him the money, ODE takes the money and gives it to that facility. If it's a program that's in Coos Bay's district and they come from Dahlem's district, the money comes to my district because I'm already providing that, service for those kids. So wherever the kid is residing at the time he's incarcerated, the money's going to flow.
Representative Greenlick, would suffice if Mr. Richards just guaranteed this was not an unfunded mandate?
Can I just ask him a question? Yeah, I'll just ask you a question. The way I read this bill is that the money that the state is generally allocating per student with all the weighted formula and all that other kind of stuff is going to follow that student so that he gets wherever he or she ends up being placed, there is going to be money there to provide an education for that student, whether it comes through ODE or whether it comes from the regular school district in that school district where it resides. Is that not the case?
Chair Buckley, Representative Roblin, that is correct.
Thank you.
I think it might clarify. That can be a court placement or a physician placement or a psychological placement.
Chair Buckley, Representative Dallin, currently for detention purposes, that is the detention program that comes through the court system. The child care programs are coming, are the treatment programs.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Rich. Appreciate your being here. Appreciate your testimony.
Here.
Is there anyone else who wants to testify? No. No one else signed up for this bill? Is anyone else here to testify on Senate Bill 216? Seeing none, members, we are in a work session. I would entertain a motion.
I move Senate Bill 216 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Dahlem has moved Senate Bill 216 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, Andy, would you please call the roll? Excused.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Get off the floor.
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries. Representative Greenlick, you don't get to carry this bill.
I would carry this. I mean, from my perspective, this is a consent agenda issue. This is just doing what we're
doing. Any objections to the consent agenda?
Seems to me it's a Rorschach test. No, the consent agenda is
Then we'll have this on the consent agenda. Thank you, Representative Roble. I'm going to close the...
Why do you guys see money?
The work session on Senate Bill 216. I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 215. Committee members, you are maintaining your reputation for taking the short bills and making them remarkably complex.
We do our best, Mr.
Chair. We'll give you another shot here actually, it's a little bit longer. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 215A allows school districts to admit students up to the age of 21 years, defines a person in a parental relationship for determining school district residency, declares an emergency, and is effective July 1st. Our one and only witness is Randy Harnish from the Department of Education.
Mr. Harnish. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Chair Buckley, members of the committee. My name is Randy Harnish, and I'm with the Department of Education. And I'll try not to talk quite as fast as I did the last time I was in front of you. This bill really deals with two separate issues that have to deal with student residency and enrollment. The first defines a term that is in statute currently, person in parental relationship. And the second deals with an inconsistency between various sections dealing with kids who have aged out of the program, and it really attempts to clarify both of those situations. The first one, the law establishes a student's residence by the residence of the student's parents, guardians, or persons in parental relationship. We don't have any problem with understanding who parents legal guardians are. Persons in parental relationship, however, is a term that is not defined in school law and is not really defined in administrative rule anywhere. And we felt that it was appropriate to define it just to give clarity to school districts around the state. The language that we came up with for to define that phrase was kind of is taken from existing statute, another part of the law that deals with parent-child relationships. The problem that we're trying to solve in this case is one mainly of timing. If I were to move my family from Salem Kaiser School District to Albany School District, my residence would change. My children would become resident of the Albany School District because of my at our per parent's residence. If we adopted a child, we became legal guardian of that child, the court would have given us the legal responsibility for providing education, and that residence would be defined again by where my wife and myself lived. If, and I hope this doesn't ever come to pass, but if we experience financial, personal problems to the extent that my children feel, or my wife and I feel, that my daughter would be better served by living with her grandmother in the Albany School District, and that we as a family make that decision, my daughter's residence at that point with her grandmother in Albany would be not a parental relationship. It would not be a legal guardianship relationship. It would be a person in a parental relationship, and the school district would be able to enroll her without missing a beat. Today, we have, I think, very well-meaning school districts who are hung up and caught up on that language of person and parental relationship because they're afraid that they may be claiming a student for whom they do not have the legal responsibility to educate, nor the legal authority to claim state school funds. And so it takes sometimes weeks and weeks to sort that out. All the while, you've got this kid who is in some kind of limbo, not attending where parent or legal guardian live, and not attending where they currently live with the person in parental relationship with grandma, because the district's trying to figure out where that responsibility officially, legally lies. This definition tries to say, if the kid is living with someone who's acting like a parent, they are considered a person in parental relationship for purposes of attending school. It's not our intention that this would change anything, that it would exclude anyone. It would. What we're trying to do is include kids who are, you know, like I say, currently kind of in a legal limbo while they try to get stuff sorted out. The one question that came up last time we met about this had to do with the possible effect and impact that the sports eligibility would have. You know, and would there be situations where a kid would decide to go live with Uncle So-and-so because they're going to have access to a better football program? Well, I went and checked on the OSAA rules, and Rule 8 on individual eligibility for transfers specifically says, and OSAA defines parent as biological or adoptive parent. They don't even include as parent someone with a legal guardianship. So there is no OSAA eligibility. Its own eligibility rules would not be impacted, affected at all by this definition. Just to reassure myself, I called this morning and talked to their assistant executive director, and he assured me that, nope, that what you're doing is with proposing to do with person and parental relationship would not have any effect on how they, OSAA, deal with eligibility issues.
Yeah. You're doing great.
Good. Well, I'll move on. The second change.
Ask your question in the first half.
You ready to take some questions on that part of it? Representative Greenlee.
Only that doesn't have anything to do with youth detention facilities.
That's right.
Completely.
No, nor mosquitoes either. would they have to do all of these things? I mean, I had an example. My son's best friend's mother died in the middle of his junior year, and he moved in with us for his junior, the rest of his junior and his senior year, and we did provide shelter and food, but he had Social Security from his mom's desk, and his dad provided the incidentals and the clothes, and we didn't do a hell of a lot with discipline because that's not necessarily, doesn't seem to work anyway. So, I mean, we did most of these things, but not all. Is there some way to, I mean, you wouldn't want to exclude somebody in that circumstance, I assume.
No, and that was never the intention. I don't see that list as an exclusively a checkbox list that you must show those components in order to meet the requirements. I do think that's something that we could take care of and clarify an administrative rule.
I was just hoping we put it on the record that
yes, that
in some disputed case they came down and said, well, you do this and this, but not this, and that's not what the legislator
right. Okay. And Chair Buckley and Representative Greenlee, I think the notion is that these are examples of what sorts of functions that the person in parental relationship would provide.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions on the parental relationship section of the bill?
Mr.
Representative Crummel.
Randy, with regard, you mentioned the OSAA and their sports programs. OSAA oversees all of the student activities, so that includes the music programs and cheerleading competitions and dance competitions and that sort of thing. And I know that they are administered differently than the sports programs. When you were talking with them, is it the same feeling? And so that if a student is a first class French horn player, and they go to another school, that they would still be able to compete at that school in that music program as a French horn player.
Representative Buckley, Representative Crummel, my understanding is that the OSA eligibility rules cover all of the activities that they administer. So there wouldn't be any difference in eligibility for a kid in the music program as it would be a kid in the sports program.
That's crazy.
Mm. Okay.
Representative Dahl.
They can't play in the band because they're in the school, but...
The reason why I bring the question, Mr. Chair, let me clarify, if I may. The reason why I bring the question up is because I had a student who was in that very situation. He was a French horn player, and was told by the OSAA that the eligibility for the music program was different and administered differently than the sports programs, and that within the sports programs there wasn't an issue because there was a way that the rule could be handled, but with regards to the music program it was administered differently, so it would be different. So I'm just wanting to clarify, you know, that fact.
Ms. Harnish?
Chair Buckley and Representative Crummel, I think I understand the question a little bit better. The eligibility that we're talking about here is based on the residential definition of eligibility.
Okay.
There are other eligibility requirements. And in a music program, for example, there is the requirement that the kid be participating in the music program of the school.
Correct.
So yeah. I think that may be
the
issue that you're talking about.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Representative Dalmuro on my list, do you have a question? No. Representative Roblin.
As I read the bill, it is a permissive bill. Districts may. The issue is if they're staying with this person, you're not going to take any stand with respect to the school. They're just going to let the person be enrolled and go to school because there's a whole lot of other issues that may be happening alongside.
Right.
Now, the question I have is this, can this person excuse absences, tell the school that it's okay to have aspirin. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things when they're under 18 that the person in front of the deal can tell the schools that the schools can't do without. And generally, it's without parental. I mean, those are more legal issues. So, and saying that they can go to school, but that person isn't going to be able to write them a note to excuse them there. Yeah, anyway, that's the question.
Representative Buckley and Representative Roblin, I think that's right. this would not solve all of those other problems. It would not meet the other possible legal requirements for a parent or legal guardian. It just allows the school district to enroll that child without any sort of time lag in order to get those things squared away. That, you know, the kid that shows up with grandma because something bad's going on at home needs to enroll in school as quickly as they can, and this just ensures that that happens as quickly as it can.
Thank you, Representative. Very good question. Representative Lim.
Thank you very much. I have a small scenario. I don't know whether you can answer or not. Just for instance, a husband and wife, they are divorced. One person living in Salem, one husband living in Albany, maybe. But the husband got the custody of the child. But somehow business, whatever, doesn't go well. That the wife provides most of the monetary support, clothing, whatever. And then which school he needs to go.
Just thank you for asking that question. That Representative Buckley and Representative Lim, that actually is a case that we're faced with on occasion, where you have a parent separated, legal custody assigned to one parent. The definition in the law says that a student is resident of the school district where the parent lives. In this case, the parents may be residing in two school districts, which means the student legally is a resident of one or the other, and they can choose which district they want to place the child in at that point. Because they meet the definition with the residence of both parents.
But follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow Representative Lim.
Both of their parents, they want their child to go to their own school. They're fighting each other. Children, since I'm providing, you need to come over here. That the father, no, I have a legal custody, he needs to go to Albany school. And then this is a messy situation. According to this, whoever provides food and clothing, you know, shelter others, this is a divided responsibility.
Chair Buckley and Representative Lim, this in that case, the parents both are legal biological parents, and this bill would not have any impact on their responsibilities. Our advice to school districts who are faced with those kinds of issues is to let the parents know that they need to work that out between themselves and with the court, and the district will wait for a court order that shows which district or which school district the student has the residence is resident of.
Thank you.
Want to continue with the rest of the bill?
Certainly.
One more point of clarification. With this parent and personal relationship, let's assume that two students show up. The school district is to enroll them. And upon examination, we find that the reason that we have new parents in a parental relationship is because the students wanted to attend school in another district. And in fact, their parents are residents in the neighboring district, and it's a clear case of wanting to attend school outside of your resident district. What then happens?
Chair Buckley and Representative Dahlem, the Section 6 on page 2, at the top of the page on line 6, says that... Section 6, line 6. Persons living temporarily in a school district for the primary purpose of attending a district school may not be considered legally resident. So I think in that situation, if a district finds that there is a situation where a student is really trying to circumvent the law, and this section would say that would give the district the ability to challenge that residence.
Thank you, Mr. Archer. We do need to need to move on if we can.
Thanks.
To the second section of the bill.
The second section deals with language on page 2 on lines 24 through 30 that requires school districts to enroll students between the ages of 5 and 19. And the law as it currently stands says that a school district must admit a student who is over 19 but not yet 21 if they are receiving special education, or if they are shown to be in need of additional education to receive a diploma. The additional education to receive a diploma definition is also a must. The school district must enroll a student that is over 19 if they're shown to be in need of an education to receive a diploma. What we wanted to do was to address what seemed to be two sections of the law that were inconsistent. The first one that said districts must enroll children between the ages of 5 and 19, and the second that says districts must enroll children between 19 and 21 if they haven't gotten a diploma. And we're recommending that that second section between 19 and 21, be permissive to the district. If the districts have the ability to, on a case-by-case basis, determine if it is in the best interest of the student to continue to allow them to be there between the ages of 19 and 21 if they haven't yet earned a diploma. Again, it's just clarifying what we believe to be an inconsistency or a lack of clarity in the current law.
Vice Chair Kump.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. Mr. Harnish, have you... Before I raise, and I want to be open about why I'm going to raise this issue, but have you thought about separating these two things into two separate bills, or is there a reason you did them joined at the hip?
We actually, when we originally looked at this bill, we had a couple other residency-related items that we all just packaged together because they were all related to residency. We hadn't looked possibly at the ability of dividing them up.
Okay. Comment, follow-up comment? To the members of the committee, this is an interesting one in the community in which I serve because a number of our students are second language learners. They will come at the age of age 4. They'll come at age 10. Mm-hmm. They'll come at age 20 and ask to be admitted to our schools. If you have a student that comes prior to this at the age of 20, and you have 13 and 14-year-olds in your freshman classes, and this person needs freshman English, you're kind of scratching your head, like, is this the best placement? And I have worked with administrators, and one has seen it one way, and then I've seen leadership people see it another way, that, okay, if you're 20 or 19, we get really right down to the dates. And one principal advised me to coach a person of this age to go check out what's at community college, not have them come to our school. And then another one took it from the other perspective and said, all people are equal and to do this. And so it's an interesting thing when you start really looking at it, as you say, on a one-to-one individual basis. But at times in our system, depending upon the migratory manner of our students, sometimes we have an abundance of people that are over 18 that don't have their diploma requirements and need an education.
Mr. Harnish, do you want to mention?
Representative Buckley and Representative Kump, I believe our intention was to expand districts' ability to respond,
right,
not to tighten the requirements on the district. It's actually the way the law currently reads. It can be construed very directly.
Yeah.
And that this broadens it and more clearly gives the decision-making authority to the local districts to assess the students.
Thank you. That's how I see it.
Okay, good.
Yes, that's exactly how I saw it. It was more permissive.
Representative Roblin.
I guess the question would be, because it is more permissive, if a person comes that's 20 years old and the district says yes, will they get the full school district allocation from the State Department for that person?
Chair Buckley and Representative Roblin, yes. That would allow the school district to receive distribution from the state school fund.
And after the 21, that is no longer available.
That's correct.
Okay. I just didn't want to make sure.
Right. No, it cuts off at 21.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Cremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Randy, how many of those students do we have in the system?
You know, Representative Buckley and Representative Cremel, I don't have that number. I can find out and get an estimate to you, but I don't have that right off the top of my head.
Okay.
Thank
you. Mr. Harsh, thank you so much for your testimony and your time today. Is there anyone else signed up to testify?
No.
Is anyone else here to testify on Senate Bill 215? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 215A to the House floor with a due pass. recommendation.
Representative Dahlin has moved Senate Bill 215A to the House floor to do pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none. Andy, would you please call the roll? Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries. Members, would a consent calendar be appropriate for this bill, or do you think it needs explaining? Any feedback?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't want to carry it, but I would tell you that I think it needs explaining because I think the custody issues are a lot bigger than what we may have even discussed in here. And the issue around where a student resides or the ability of the parents to pick and choose which district. If you've got two parents living in two separate districts and the parents in, you know, and who knows, maybe it is based on sports teams or music programs or other things that OSAA would be determining rulings on. But I think that there is an issue there with regard to...
I appreciate that. Representative Roblin has agreed visually. He nodded his head when I looked at him, so Representative Roblin will carry this bill for us.
Questions?
With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 215, open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1040. And Mr. Olson, when you have time, senators, please join us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1040 requires school district boards to adopt policies and procedures for kindergarten through grade 12 students to self-administer asthma or severe allergy medication. It absolves certain school personnel from criminal action or for civil damages, assisting with students' self-administration of medication under certain circumstances. Declares an emergency and is effective July 1st, 2007. There are two amendments before you, but I understand that we may now have consensus behind the Dash 2 amendment, which would modify the definitions of asthma and medication, delete language requiring the student to demonstrate to the school staff person designated to the administered medication the student's skill level necessary to do so, and it would also require the student's parent or guardian provide medication to the student and emergency backup medication in the school office. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Senators, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Whoever would like to start, Senator Cruz.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1. And I want to first off thank you for hearing this bill. I think this is very, very good public policy. This is another example of little things that the Senate President has found over his time as Senate President that need to be adjusted to make things better for people in Oregon. He's done this on several different issues, and this was one. The reason, and in fact the original bill was President Courtney's bill, as we heard it in the Senate Education Committee, it was dealing specifically with asthma at that point in time, and our thought was that maybe we ought to expand it to allow for all kids who have severe allergies to be able to self-medicate in the schools. What we found was the relating clause was too narrow, and so I used a priority bill to draft one with a broad enough relating clause to cover the whole aspect of it. Mr. Olson mentioned the Dash 2 amendments, and we do support the Dash 2s. We tried really hard to write a perfect bill so it wouldn't have to be amended, and we did not quite get there. Once we discovered we had more work to do, I convened a work group of school nurses and school administrators and folks from the Lung Association. We sat down and talked about language and talked about all the things we needed to put in the bill. The meeting lasted for about 3 hours, and the result was Senate Bill 1040. I think it's very straightforward. Our decision was not to make this a bureaucratic nightmare in any way, just to basically have a line of accountability and responsibility so that if a child, and we'll use asthma as the example, if he has asthma and can demonstrate that he knows how to use his inhaler, he should be able to have his inhaler, and he should be able to use it when it's appropriate. And for the other things mentioned in the bill, the Dash 2 basically is to a degree just giving us some better definitions and also taking off the, if you will look at Section 1, Sub B on line 24 through 26, basically, that what was brought to us was that we weren't sure, because in most schools it would be the school secretary who is the designated person, that they probably should not have to have the level of expertise to determine if this child is capable of self-administering, because clearly before that we already have the doctor who has said yes he can and the parent who has said yes he or she can. That should be enough. And so the removal of that is taking a burden off school secretaries that we'd never really intended to put on them. We just wanted to make sure there was a clear line of command and control through this. And with that, I think that's the definition, and then that minor change, I think, makes it darn near a perfect bill. And you know, our ultimate goal here is to make it clear and distinct and easy for kids who have severe allergies to be able to take their medicine. That's all we're after, is that they should have the ability. A lot of schools already have this in place. Not all do. This makes it very clear and distinct that they will. So I want to thank the president for bringing this issue before us. And this is one of those little things that is good for kids, and I'm very happy to be part of this. Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Cruz, Chair Buckley, and members of the House Committee on Education. I'm Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator representing District 11, which includes Salem, portions of Salem, Woodburn, and Jervis, and I live at 2925 Island View Drive North here in Salem. When the American Lung Association came to me and asked me to introduce the bill, it involved the asthma situation. Apparently, students with asthma, depending upon the school district, were not necessarily allowed to bring the inhalant with them into the school. And I have a type of, it's almost funny, the asthma they call athletic asthma, but I don't know what it means. I just know it affects me in certain ways, and I don't even know what it, I know it's uncomfortable, but this is much more severe asthma that they have. So we introduced this bill to perhaps allow the students to be able to self-medicate and bring their inhalants in, and the bill got in trouble right off the bat. It was Senate Bill 533, got in trouble, because its relating clause was only asthma, but then we had the whole issue of allergies that it just simply could not cover. The bill could not cover it. Also, the Oregon School Nurses Associations came on board in this bill. They were totally opposed to the bill. And I think even as the bill came off the Senate floor, they opposed it, and I'm not even sure today they support it. I won't get into that, but as I understand it, some school districts allow students to carry certain types of medication with them. Other schools have a zero-tolerance policy for all types of medication. So basically what this does is say that we're not trying to discriminate among our many different school districts, but we are trying to talk to those young people who really are up against it when it comes to asthmas or different types of allergies. And it was the good Senator Jeff Cruz who said, "Will you mind if I introduce a priority bill?" By all means. And he took it and he ran with it, and he included the allergy issues and made it a bill that was really great. And he who did the heavy lifting to get it off the Senate floor. Just in the area of asthma, if this is correct, the Oregon Healthy Teen Survey in 2006 found that 10% of Oregon students have asthma. 10%. That's just asthma. It's not the allergies. I don't know what those figures are. Good Representative Crumbles here, and he's very good in these areas, and maybe there's others here that are. But we know that 10% of them got asthma. And asthma is more than just a cough. I mean, it can really knock you down. It can exhaust you and tire you out. And if they don't have these devices to administer it, these kids are really up against it in these schools. So this is a good bill. And we worked very hard. There are apparently some 30 other states, and I never like these kind of figures unless they advantage me, but because they can be used against you. At least 38 other states have some kind of legislation like that. I'm not telling you that's the reason we should pass this bill, but at least it's been on it's been something other legislators across this nation and other states have had to think about and worry about and analyze, because they've had kids that are up against it too, as you can well understand. It's a great bill. Senator Jeff Cruz did a remarkable job with this thing, and
it really has got a little mo now, and I hope you can find your way to pass it out. I guess there's some additional amendments. I just learned about walking in the room. Everybody's on board with those as well. So thank you very much for allowing us to, for taking up this bill and for letting me come here today and testify before this committee.
Thank you very much, Senator. Members, any questions?
Chair Buckley, just for clarification, the issue that the nurses had with the bill is interpretation of language, and when they expressed their concerns in committee, as I read the bill, I think their concerns are covered in the language. So it's just a matter of how you read words, and you all know that we all tend to read them slightly differently. But I'm pretty comfortable with the language that it does achieve their objectives. I mean, we just kind of danced a little bit on that. But I ended up at the end of the day listened to them and read the bill and said, I think this covers your concerns. So there wasn't really opposition. It gets down into the fine points is where we might have still had some differences.
Thank you, Senator. Seeing no questions, thank you both very much. Representative
Crumlin,
didn't raise his hand, but
yeah, I didn't read the memo, but I was just wondering, sort of calling on the Senate President's legal background for a moment here. Is this going? Do you read this as being too limiting, as far particularly with allergy medications, because there are some allergy meds that are dispensed via pill form, and this in both the amendment and in the bill, it says inhaled includes inhaled bronchodilators and auto-injectable epinephrine. What I'm concerned about is, what if a student is on a medication that is dispensed via a tablet or capsule? Is that going to be limited in the bill to be able to be dispensed by the student?
You want to start? I can say. I'm going to say something. Go ahead if you want.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, it's not meant to be limiting. We're dealing with emergency.
Right.
With emergencies here, most pill forms are not necessarily an emergency application. This is very narrow. We could have got into seizure meds and things like that, and we didn't want to go there, quite simply because that takes us into a whole other realm. And so what we basically looked at was what will cover 90-95% of what currently occurs in schools. And kind of focus on that. We didn't want to get too far afield from the basic mission of what we're attempting to do here. So we figure if we're covering 9 and 9.5 out of 10, that we're doing some pretty good work.
Chair Buckley, can I be allowed to discuss this with the good Representative Crummell?
Please.
You point me to what your that's a very fascinating question. It says the school board shall adopt policy procedure that provide for self-administration of medication, goes on, students with asthma and severe allergies. So it says that.
Mm-hmm.
In school, at a school-sponsored activity, while under the supervision of school personnel, before school or after. My point is, it's possible there where you could allow a pill form, I believe.
Yeah.
Now, I... What? Did someone just... I don't know. I got... I'm doing my best here. That's possible that you're all right there. That might do it. Otherwise, there'd be problems. Because this reminds me of the issue where... I had a bill involving taking chemotherapy by pill versus by the needle, and how, as a result, insurance companies were saying no to the pill but yes to the needle, and we had to pass a bill.
Mm-hmm.
So this is somewhat, your question, it's a very good question, reminds me of that, but I think You need to be sure of that one, Mr. Chair. Should you choose to move this bill out, I think that's a very good question, because I'm not conversant. You are, Representative Cromwell, for a variety of you. You have a very extensive medical background as a trainer and everything. To be careful, because we do, the world of medicine is dynamic now in terms of how you put things into your body. So I don't know. I read you some language that maybe helps you, but I don't know.
Okay. Interesting.
Representative Dolan.
Is doing asthma and doing school superintendent, I think the bill is ideal. What it does is it allows for the use of a bronchial dilator on an as-need basis. And that comes to an asthma sufferer when particulate of a certain type is in the air, through exertion, a whole host of things. They know. The bill says you get out your bronchial dilator, suck on it, and away you go. If you take another type of inhalant, it's usually prescribed once daily or twice daily and is not the kind you carry in your pocket. The pill is to help long term. And the bill simply addresses emergencies. And it goes on to say that if our juvenile forgets his inhaler, which seldom ever happens in a school, the school will have one and they will give it to him. And that's all it says. So that our kid will be covered. I think the bill is well written. I think the bill does a good job. It has also removed the responsibility from the school nurse. And in some cases, the student would present themselves to the office, because all medications, blanket coverage, in some schools, are held in the office. That meant when Junior had the onset of an asthma attack, he had to survive long enough to get to the office. And sometimes you do that in a real hurry. So the bill takes care of that. And it simply lets him carry his inhaler. I think it's a good bill. Here comes the other part. Should pass.
Sure. Mr. Chair, in response to, just to clarify what Representative Dolan said, the bill allows for the school to have an emergency supply. It doesn't require the school to have an emergency supply. The emergency supply would still have to be provided by the parents, so there's no obligation on the school to purchase the medication. But it does have provisions, and it's very loose. For example, the kid's got an inhaler that's maybe half used, and they could put that in the office, and so he's got an emergency supply there for that rare occasion when he might forget to bring his from home. So, but that's very permissive language, and because we thought we didn't want to go down a path that was going to require schools to start buying meds for kids. So, so that's kind of where the emergency supply rests, is it's permissive and allows the school to have it, but doesn't require them to purchase it.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Representative Roble.
A really good bill, and having been in situations that felt, you know, they are life and death with some of these. The one that I still remember, and I have a person back in the district that always says, "I'm only alive because of you, therefore, you're going to have my vote," kind of thing. Because she had a peanut allergy, and we put things in things inadvertently at times, not even thinking about people with severe allergies. And so you're having school lunch, and all of a sudden it's got meths in it, and you're having a reaction, and the only person in that room that knows that is the person who's having the reaction. I mean, nobody else understands what's going on. That person made it to the office in time, because you're right, that's where that always is. And for a number of those people, they need to have their injectable or whatever they're going to take on them at all times. And I don't know if I'd ever give myself that epinephrine shot, but I guess some of those people have to.
Mm-hmm.
And
your life depends on it. You give yourself the shot.
And we have, we have those kinds of things around the schools. Some of these inhalers act almost exactly the same way for these kids, and they know how to take care of themselves. They've been trained. They understand how serious it is, and we need to have the tools to let them do what they need to do. So, great bill. I thank you for bringing it, because that was singularly the most frightening experience I've ever had, because I figured out, because we do have a lot of allergies in my family, what was going on. We got 911. We got the ambulance there in time. But it was nip and tuck with respect to these things. People don't understand how it is. So.
Members, thank you. Representative Greenleaf?
Thank you.
We'd allow the witnesses to testify on this bill, just to let you know.
Yeah, I'm interested in this bill, too. I have a granddaughter that carries an EpiPen with her for a severe peanut allergy, and her life could easily depend on that. I hope she can find it if she ever needs it.
Yeah.
In her backpack.
That's a bad problem.
That is, yeah. That's a whole different problem. I'm intrigued with this 3B that require the student to demonstrate. I mean, after a doctor has recorded proficiency and the parents say proficiency.
Representative, just to clarify that the dash two amendment will does remove that, and they are
right.
They are
and
in
we're
favor.
Gonna excellent.
Yes, and we support that removal.
Great, thank you.
I wish all questions were that easy.
What question?
Self-answering. Sanders, thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. It's an excellent bill. Thanks for your time. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time, I'm going to call 3-4-up at once. We have Tricia Smith, Carol Zirkel, and Beverly Stewart, please.
What was this bill? Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm going to go first. I'm here first. I'll speak
you first. Go first, sir.
I am Carol Zirkel, the president of Oregon School Nurses Association, that rascally person that has been a thorn in some people's sides. I would like to start with a very brief example of why I was that thorn, because the first bill did not require backup medication. And 17 days ago in one of our schools, just south of Salem, a 16-year-old girl had a severe allergy attack in the band room. She, Representative Greenlight, did not know where her inhaler was. What was her inhaler? She couldn't find it. She didn't know where it was. Nobody else knew where it was. Thank goodness there was a school nurse in that particular district. She had several miles to travel because she was in one of her other seven schools. And she grabbed, because of her dealings and her expertise in asthma and allergies, grabbed her stock medication of albuterol inhaler, the bronchodilator, and she also grabbed an epinephrine because of possibilities. She didn't know what she was going to find. Anyway, she got to this school. The student was in severe distress. She administered an albuterol inhaler treatment, or actually a nebulizer treatment. It did not work. And the student, 911 had been called, 911 had not gotten there, and the student was in severe distress. I believe that this nurse saved her life. She, at that point, accessed the epinephrine, administered the epinephrine to this 16-year-old girl. My very strong point in that is I want to thank the ALAO for sitting down at the table for us and requiring that backup medication in the office. If that medication had not been available to that school nurse, I believe this student would have died. And I think that that was a very important process or a point why we were such pills at the previous bills, because we were so concerned about some of the aspects and safeguards that would be in place. Obviously, there is not a school nurse in every school. I think there's a strong possibility that this student might have died anyway, had there not been a nurse there, because the school secretary, as marvelous a job as they do, would not have the medical assertion or the ability to say, this is not working, she needs epinephrine, and therefore administer it. So I want to thank ALAO sitting down and working through that with us. The other, as I looked at the amendments that they proposed, and I am speaking for this bill, I do want you, however, to, in the rewriting of it with this, they added that word, inhaled bronchodilators. And, I mean, that's fine. There may be in the future, however, bronchodilators that are administered in other methods. And just so that you don't have to go back and rewrite things, what if they come up someday with a sublingual? It's important that it is the fast-acting emergency life-saving bronchodilator. It doesn't matter how you administer it, as long as they get it. And so I just wanted to share those things. I want to thank you for the ability to speak up for the children of Oregon. Right now, the majority of them can, in districts, work it out so that they can We as an organization have volunteered to the American Lung Association. If they run into a circumstance where a child is denied the ability to self-carry, we would go to that school and we would intervene with the administration and find out what's going on and advocate for the child to be able to self-carry their emergency medications. One more quick comment about the pill, Representative Crummell. This bill is very wisely directed at emergency medications and life-saving medications because there is a huge opportunity in schools for medications to be misused and to be sold. If they popped a pill, it's not going to save their life. Those are the long-acting, as was said before. But for an emergency medication, the Oregon School Nurses Association is definitely in favor of students, when saved, to safe carry and self-administer.
Mr. Chair, can we take testimony from all three first, and then we'll go back. Thank you. Thank you, Representative.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, my name is Beverly Stewart. I'm with the American Lung Association of Oregon. And first, I would like to thank you for hearing this important bill, and also to thank Senator Cruz and Senator Courtney. They've spent an enormous amount of time advocating for and working with us to make this a good bill, so I appreciate that. We're here in support of Senate Bill 1040. Our mission is to prevent lung disease and promote lung health, and we feel that Senate Bill 1040 is a good public policy for Oregon. There are 60,000 kids in Oregon that have asthma, and it's the leading cause of school absenteeism. Because of the time-sensitive nature of an asthma attack, physicians often instruct patients to carry their rescue medications with them at all times. That's what we're addressing. There is also 39 states, as Senator Courtney mentioned, that have statewide policies allowing students the right to self-carry and self-administer inhalers and EpiPens in schools. The Oregon law, as it states right now, says that school boards shall adopt policies and procedures that provide for self-medication. What this bill does is standardizes and strengthens for all schools that they would be following in the same steps and ensuring the same accountability and accessibility for students. It also calls for a strength... I'm going to pass that. So this bill will help ensure the earliest access and administration in the midst of an asthma attack or allergic reaction. It will also help ensure that the child goes back to the classroom instead of going to the emergency room. We've worked closely with the Department of Human Services, Public Health Division, and they're in support of Senate Bill 1040. The Oregon Department of Education and the Confederation of School Administrators are also okay with this bill. So on behalf of the American Lung Association of Oregon, I ask you to support Senate Bill 1040 and have Oregon join the other 39 states that are supporting self-carrying medication laws. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, a union of 20,000 classified and licensed education professionals working in K-12 school districts, ESDs, community colleges, Head Start Association, park and recreation agencies, and libraries. And I'm here in support of Senate Bill 1040 with the Dash 2 amendments. We requested a piece of the Dash 2 amendments. The piece of the Dash 2 that we are most interested in is on line 7 of the Dash 2. And that language would delete lines 24 through 26 of the bill as it's written. This would eliminate the requirement that the person in the school that's designated to be the keeper of medication, that person would have to test the student and determine to that person's satisfaction that the student could indeed administer the medication. Our concern with that is the way the bill is constructed. The child's parents take the child to the doctor. The doctor prescribes the medication and is required to instruct the child on how to use it, presumably to the physician's satisfaction and to the parent's satisfaction. The parent takes the child to school, and then my secretary says, you know, I'm just not sure you're up on this. I don't think so. We don't want our school secretaries, who are the people in schools today in the most, in many, many, many cases, who are responsible for children's medication and for assisting them in administering medication, we don't want them to be second-guessing healthcare professionals in whether or not a child can administer the medication. That should be up to the child's parent and doctor to make that decision. So we appreciate your support of the Dash 2 amendment and the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Kremel, you had a question?
No, actually, it's not a question. It's a clarification. I understand that the pill form for asthma is long-term care versus short-term care, and I also understand that the bill is addressing the issue of the bronchodilators and epinephrine, EpiPens, and so on for emergency type of care. However, just as Junior walks off without his inhaler, Junior also walks out of the door without having taken his meds in the morning. And if the student is able to take it, then that's fine. The other aspect of that is it just was mentioned by Ms. Zirkel. I'm pretty sure the pharmaceuticals companies are probably out there working on the sublingual patch, or not patch, but tablet, or like these like the breath mint things that you take in there, you know, like a thin wafer, not even a wafer, but a thin cellophane. Those types of things, because one of the quickest way to get any kind of a metal, aside from inhaling it or injecting it, one of the quickest ways to get a medication into the body is to stick it into your tongue. Because it's absorbed much quicker than it would be in other methods. So I just don't want that. Well, I understand the concept of the bill, and I don't have a problem with the concept of the bill. I just want to make sure that we're not getting to a point of limiting ourselves or limiting the schools from the standpoint that that it, you know, in the at some point in the future it becomes not helpful. And I also, you know, from a standpoint of the parent providing the medication to the school, providing a tablet with Billy's name on it probably wouldn't be a problem either. But be that as it may, I don't mean to get into a match here with the experts, but it's just, I just wanted to make sure that we're not being
able to answer that.
Yes, we should.
I absolutely agree with you. We had originally, when we sat down with ALO, used the word emergency bronchodilators rather than inhaled, so that if another form became available to acquire that bronchodilator, that it would have nothing would have to be changed. It's no matter what it is, whether it's a sublingual or a inhaled medication, it's going to be a bronchodilator to open up those lungs. And so that's why we had suggested just emergency bronchodilator, and then it would not matter how it was administered. As to if Johnny forgets the medication dose at home, of the pill form, those are already in place in that they have those medications at the school, and they could then, since it's not an emergency, they could go to the school and follow the procedure and acquire that medication. So.
Ms. Smith, did you want to comment on that?
No, sir.
All right. Representative Robles.
Yeah, just a quick one of a comment. You know, these bills are good because it does another thing, too. It heightens it for the people out there who have kids that have these problems. And oftentimes, they aren't even telling, when you have them fill out the deal, does your student have any health problems, they don't even put it down. I mean, it has become such a part of their family that they don't think of it as an emergency. Their kid has always had it with them. And the schools don't even know it sometimes. So the student starts having a problem. This at least tells the schools, and you could give it to the school, they'd know. I mean, I'll tell you, knowing is a really important thing around schools. And we've had a number of kids that are type 1 diabetics, and some who we didn't know they were type 1 diabetics. And all of a sudden they're having a reaction, and people are thinking they're drunk, or they're thinking there's others. And when you get ketone breath when you're low, it gets very dangerous. And all you need to do is give them some sugar or something, and they can be back. It frustrates me as a parent that some parents get so commonplace about these things that they don't let the schools know in advance, and it's really difficult to help. These bills heighten that again, and it gives the appropriate ways for the schools to do it, and it also hopefully gets the schools to know that these kids have these severe problems.
Yes. Representative, a comment to that, I agree wholeheartedly, and it works both ways. There are those parents who become complacent about it, but there are hundreds of thousands of parents out there who also are not proactive for their child, and the school nurse faces situations every single day. We face medication issues. We face children not having their medications, accessing those. I know that this is not the status I would have loved to have seen school nurse in this bill, because that would truly ensure the safety of Oregon school children. And but we take it one step at a time.
Thank you very much. We have one more witness on this bill. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for coming forward. Mr. Olson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Linda Ralloway, I believe, is our last witness.
That was the bill. What's the legislative?
Chairman Buckley and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to present today. My name is Linda R. Ralloway. I live at 2946 Northeast 108th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. I am a licensed respiratory care practitioner and a certified asthma educator. I am listed on your agenda as opposing this legislation. That is because I have not kept up electronically with the amendments, and I was here to testify against the use of school staff practicing medicine. That was my primary purpose in coming to this meeting, to assure that things were clear. I also want to, and I appreciate the work and effort that's been generated here and devoted to this issue. I can tell from the knowing looks of people who have worked in schools, and I've worked in schools with kids with asthma, because I formerly worked for the Lung Association, working in schools, is that people that have had the experience of dealing with children in life-threatening episodes are believers. They're the faithful, and they never want to repeat that experience again. They want the best for their kids, just as we do. So I have provided you with copies of existing Oregon Administrative Regulation 581-021-0037. This is based on House Bill 2535, passed by the 1997 state legislature, and these regulations were adopted July 1st, 1998. You will note in those there's considerable reference to student self-medication and the recommended model policy from the Oregon School Board Association, written in 1998, again clearly delineates and defines the use of self-medication, the age recommendations, the qualities that are required. So I commend you for your efforts in attending to this. I'm sure glad I don't have to testify against this bill, because I do support it. There is some other information there about public law, 108-377, that is actually driving this work, so that our agencies in Oregon, state agencies and other agencies working on asthma, will receive preferential consideration for funding of work related to asthma. So I thank you for the time. I'm not going to have to go on and on.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate your consideration and coming forward today.
Sure.
Thank you.
And I don't represent any agency. I'm just a
members, I'm going to, with your permission, I'm going to, because we do have one other bill we need to get to the discussion. And what I'm going to do, members, is I'm going to just check with the proponents. I'm going to close the work session, carry this bill over to Wednesday. I think the idea of changing the -2 to, from inhaled to emergency, might be where we need to go on the -2 to address those concerns. Representative Dahl?
It is a minor change in one word.
I do make it makes my committee minister just very nervous. You know.
Yeah, I would say since we have counsel who can work with us quickly, I can work with them and perhaps have something, you know, prescription for emergency bronchodilators, including inhaled bronchodilators or something to that effect. I don't know. We can talk afterwards. But in any event, we can bring it back up on Wednesday for a work session, rather than do a conceptual amendment, which legislative council prefers not.
We'll we'll indulge committee administrator and get that done. We'll
like it out on the edge.
Perhaps I could, Mr. Chair, just ask the participants if they could talk quickly amongst themselves, and maybe we could talk after the meeting, and then I could take whatever the consensus is to legislative council. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oaks. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1040, and I'm going to open up the work session for Senate Bill 318. And members, when I started out today, I said that I need more time on this bill to talk to people. Apparently, they talk to each other without needing me, and they seem like they have come to an agreement of sorts. So we might be able to move on this. Representative Clem, do you have?
Yeah, I'd like to move the Dash 15 amendments.
I would like to see the Dash 15.
Yeah, some people need
to get along. I've got my copy.
That's good.
She's here.
It's just I'd like an opportunity to read them.
Absolutely. We definitely want to read. In fact, we want to go over where we are with Senate Bill. We do have 20 minutes or so.
We're going to get discussion started on
Let's
something.
Let's take our time.
That's all I'm saying.
You got to start it, all right.
Parley Pro, 101.
Mr. Olson's going to do a quick summary of what we have before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 318. The original bill changes the list of activities for school district grants awarded from the School Improvement Fund, directs the Department of Education to establish monetary awards for school districts and programs that show extraordinary progress towards student achievement goals, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. As Representative Clem had mentioned, we have the A15 amendments. We have also in front of you the A9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I won't explain them all. They're explained in your staff measure summary. They all basically replace most of the text and make different changes. And I think I'll stop there, and I could answer any questions, because otherwise it would take me quite a while to explain them all.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Oh, no, Mr. Chair, that's for you. I'm sorry.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, that's Anthony. Representative Clem has moved the Dash 15 amendments to Senate Bill 318. We are in discussion. I want to make sure we have folks who have... I know. I had a note that Sue Hildick might want to offer words. No, you're fine. Lori Wilmer Whalen, did you want to offer words?
Mr. Chair and committee members, Lori Wilmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association, and I've brought somebody with me. I hope you'll indulge us both. We are here to thank you all for your patience once again. The A15s, which are in front of you, represent what we would characterize as a deal with all of the parties that have testified before you on this bill over time. And they will take the Dash 9s that we were advocating for last week, which put ESDs into the School Improvement Fund, and additionally add some language that Mr. Rose offered up, and that came in through the Dash 15 amendments via Representative Comp, Vice Chair Comp. And so, and what they will do is make sure that the money is spent on school improvement that the ESDs get. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to him, and except to say that we are very grateful to all of you for your indulgence with us, and hope that you can find your way to support this, as all the members of the education community have.
Thank you, Ms. Morrow. Ms. Rose.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if there's consensus, I don't need to talk very long.
You have to introduce yourself, please.
Because I've talked with... Excuse me?
Please introduce yourself.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't done this very often. I'm with the Education Service District Association. I reside in Salem.
Thank you, Mr. Rose.
I just want to share two facts. I've talked to quite a few of you, and the level of awareness of what ESDs do is not as high as it should be. But there are two issues here. One is the policy question of ESDs helping all districts pooling resources and creating good school improvement. The second issue is 6% of the kids in the state are in ESD classrooms all day, all year. In this county, the kids just in McLaren, Hillcrest, and the state hospital, which those programs are run by this ESD, if it were a school district, it would be the 76th largest school district in the state. In Multnomah County, there are 6,289 kids in classrooms all day, all year, run by the ESD. If they were a single school district, they would be the 15th largest school district in the state. So the ESDs are involved with kids and teachers. I just want to broaden your understanding of that. Thank you.
Questions, members? Thank you very much for being forward. Representative Dolan.
I'd like some time to read it. Could we move it at our next meeting?
The request from the proponents of this bill is that they are anxious to get this to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I've got to go to my school district.
This one doesn't go to Ways and Means.
This one doesn't go to Ways and Means? Go straight through?
Right.
I'd also like to know where Stand for Children and Chalkboard are on this.
There's a thumbs up from Chalkboard in the back.
And I got a thumbs up from
Thumbs up from Governor's Office. I have a note that basically says that these are the people I wanted to talk to about this bill: the Governor's Office, Stanford Children, Chalkboard Project, OEA, OSEA, OSBA, COSA. They all talked without me, which probably was better. And they've reached an agreement on the Dash 15s.
I have some constituents that have a deep and abiding interest that I talked to as late as Sunday. I have not had a chance to visit with them. They've not had a chance to see this, and I'd like some time to talk with them. And absent that time, I'll have to be a no vote.
Very good. Representative Wisnant also is requesting for time. We'll carry this bill over till Wednesday.
Thank you.
All right.
Can I make one comment for the record before we leave this, and then I won't say anything on Wednesday?
You can always speak, Vice Chair.
I highly respect the people in this room and the work that they've done for our children. But as a just a parent, John Q. Public, and Mr. Rose, I really think it's great that 6% of the money goes to school classrooms, directly to school classrooms. I wish it was at least 46% of the money from ESDs were going directly to classrooms.
Is it really?
From my perspective, this is one of those bills that moving it now would be helpful. So I know that there's a couple that would like to look at it and take some time. I think that they can. I think they can vote no and they can check with those people and see. But I think that they'll find that most of those people are going to come and say, this is a reasonable compromise with respect to that. And I would just assume it. But if you're determined to not, that would be, I guess that's your choice. And I asked you earlier, so I can't do much. But I would love to see it move today.
Yeah. Representative, I appreciate that. We've tried to run the committee in a very open way and tried to take members' concerns into consideration. And I'm not
comfortable. What kind of nonsense is that?
Mr. Chair.
And we appreciate that.
Can I just give a little verbal description of what I think happened so as people go to think about it, since my motion's apparently going to just sit there for a couple of days?
Yeah, thank you, Representative.
Yeah. So, you know, what this says is, yes, ESDs are going to be sort of allowed into the pool, which they, you know, weren't originally in the bill, and that was what the Dash 9s or somebody was about. You know, I think Dash 9s were saying they're back in the pool. This is, yes, they're going to be allowed in the pool, but only in the school improvement fund, and that all of it has to go directly towards the 100% of the amounts received has to go into the programs, none to administration. So it's sort of a compromise, and Representative Roman can probably finish it off, but so we can get people thinking about the policy. It's yes, they're going to be in because they do play a role, but we're going to make sure it all goes to administration. And it's only in the school improvement pot and not the rest of it, if I got that right.
I think you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion on these amendments?
I just want to say, to clarify that, you know, it has to be in that area, but it also has to go through the resolution process, which means that all of the, and that's a big process that ESDs do, that have each school district has to vote on it. So, and you have to get over 50% of the kids, there's a big process with respect to making sure that each one of the districts within the ESD district has a say on it. So not only does it have to go into those things, it has to be approved by a majority of the people there. So I think it does the kinds of things that, from my perspective, are really important if we're going to have the ESDs having the money, and it continues to let the school districts help guide where that money is going to go. And I think that's a good compromise. So.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion?
I think, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for what you're doing. I hope the committee will understand that both Representative Dow and I had some school districts who are very strong against it, so I hope they'll support it. I hope I can support it. I think we still did not address the mentoring funding, and I'm not sure how that's going to be, and that's why I'd like to talk to chalkboard offline, unless, you know, unless we have an answer to that.
Well, they're giving the thumbs up in the back of the room.
They've got it resolved.
So hopefully they will have it resolved.
We have some commitments from people that before we go home, we're going to take care of the mentoring issue from all the parties, and that it's going to be where it should be.
Well, I think
as a line item with respect to the
and I hope
the
committee would want to put that on the record.
Is anything else for?
I kind of put it on the record now. We'll do it more on Wednesday.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. I too will talk to some folks back at home, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to do that with regards to the Dash 9, the Dash 15 amendments. I got 9 stuck in my brain.
Very good.
Procedurally,
I had three of the amendments.
Did Representative Clinton withdraw his
motion? If he does not withdraw his motion, will we reopen the work session? Will we still be under the motion?
If he does not withdraw his motion, then we can't adjourn without taking some kind of an action on it. We can table it, or he can withdraw it, or we can vote it down. But you don't probably want to vote it down.
No.
Dash 15 amendments, and so you don't want to do that. So if he, your simplest option is for him to withdraw his motion.
Representative Clement, if you will withdraw your motion, I will, when we open the work session on Wednesday, we'll have you submit your motion.
All right, fine. I withdraw my motion.
Thank you, Representative.
With that, members, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 318. If there's nothing else, we will close the committee hearing for today. Thank you very much.